I was good, bro. I was just checking in with you.
Throw the first. Each of y'all throw the first. I'm gonna let y'all lead. Honestly, I'm gonna come in with my albums later. But throw the like the first two albums that came to mind or that y'all maybe put on y'all list in regards to what y'all feel were memorable or impactful or impressive debut albums.
I kind of alluded to it, and I kind of alluded to something to say. Victory Lap, Nipsey Hussle. That was honestly like I'm thinking about like anticipated debut albums, like in terms of like years. That Nipsey Hussle one was a big one because I mean he put all these mixtapes out, like Slauson, all those albums. You know what I'm saying? There's a lot of mixtapes and whatnot, but he was alluding to Victory Lap coming for a long time. I mean, like years. He'd be like, yo, people keep asking for Victory Lap. When's it coming? And the fact that he dropped it and actually like lived up to the billing, and it was actually probably like one of his best projects, just like overall, it's pretty impressive in my opinion. And it honestly took him to another level, because I think people knew Nipsey Hussle. I think people knew who he was and whatnot. But the fact that it kind of took him to like that next level, and unfortunately he died like shortly after. But the fact that it took him to that level, I think, is super impressive in that sense. Because, you know, sometimes it's a debut album come out, he's like, oh, that guy came and went. But the fact that he was building, people knew who he was, he had hardcore fans, and then the debut album kind of leveled him up. And it wasn't like he had a huge single or anything. It wasn't like it was like a super, like, you know, commercially huge album. But I think people really, really loved it. And that was a moment. That was like,
it was a
even
moment.
Though he's not, yeah, it yeah. was a moment for sure, and yeah. I think that's one of the first ones that came out, especially like super recently, that really mattered to me.
Yeah, for what it's worth, you got to add to that. He dropped that 2018. That was a loaded year. Like, you know, we have those years where like all of the big people dropped. Like, it took balls for him to drop that within the midst of Drake, Kanye, the Black Panther soundtrack, Pusha T, Nas, like. It took balls to drop that.
How about that too?
That was a big year. Yeah.
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cardi B dropped that year, actually.
Cardi B won the Grammy
off Invasion of Privacy. Yeah.
And no disrespect to Invasion of Privacy, but I feel like Victory Lap, I mean, that was a loaded category that year anyway, but Victory Lap was worthy of, like, it was worthy of the nom. And if it had won, I don't think anybody in the hip-hop community would have looked at that and been like, that somebody got snubbed. Like, even in a loaded category, like, that's how well I feel like that album was received. And I think, to your point, Noah, for him to be around as long, like, in the music scene as long, and like you said, for the album to deliver, like, Nipsey dropping and kind of being introduced to mainstream was a moment for a lot of people. There were a lot of people that learned about Nipsey Hussle in the moment of him dropping. So I think that, mixed with the fact that the album itself was actually very good sonically and just really, I guess, highlighted how good Nipsey was, honestly, to a larger audience of people, definitely could see it making a list. I mean, I think of a debut album as a moment as well, because not all debut albums, I feel like, are, they can transcend, but it may not mean that they had a really large, like, slam effect type of moment where, like, the industry kind of was put on notice. I feel like in a way, Victory Lap would fall into that category of, no, there was a new demographic of people that learned about Nipsey Hussle, hence him ascending a level in a way, like, within the culture of hip hop, yes, but really in the culture of music even at that point. So I think those would be other factors to consider as well. But,
and I'm just looking at these albums that dropped in 2018 too. Daytona, Pusha T, Invasion of Privacy. Jid dropped an album. Travis Scott, Drake,
ASAP Rocky,
Lil
Mac
Wayne
dropped that year too.
Vince Staples, Mac Miller, Kid See Ghost was a good album. J Rock. I mean, it was a lot of artists. Gunna, Migos, like the Black Panther album, obviously. Yeah, it's a lot. I mean, there's a lot more too, but like, yeah, that was a big year.
Yeah, huge year. Yeah, Kevin, what was your first one, or what's one of the first ones that came to mind for you?
Well, actually, when you approached me with this convo, I immediately went to the first album that I ever bought. Like, you know, went to the store and actually bought, and that was '98. That was DMX's "It's Dark and Hell Is Hot." Like, we see the clips all the time of X performing, but like to actually be like a kid and aware of how big he was, because he dropped two albums that year, but It's Dark and Hell is Hot was like the album. So seeing him go on the run in 98, like, you know, he just passed, what, 2 years ago? Yeah, 2 years ago. And, you know, people know him for his, like, commercial hits, some of the antics and stuff like that. But if you seen X in 98 when that had dropped, crazy. I mean, crazy. So that, for me, was one of the most influential albums I've ever seen. Not even just in New York, but just across hip-hop, even music. His influence with that debut, that like that gritty sound, like that different nature, and just carrying Rough Riders, like that was a different time for me personally. So I've always revert back to it. It's aged really well, and that's actually one of the best album covers in my opinion of all time. Oh, yeah. Too.
That covers,
so the, yeah, so the marketing is just phenomenal. I don't think they got a single thing wrong, because it dictates how strong of a impact he had, that he was able to drop another one the same year based off of that momentum.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I think that's what like kind of makes, I'm glad you pointed that out, because the fact that he dropped like a second one that same year, and obviously it wasn't as good, but it was still good, I think even makes the debut even more impressive. The fact that, you know, obviously It's Dark and Hell is Hot, it's probably his best album too, but the fact that he dropped a second one that same year and it was still well received and whatnot, I think that's honestly just as impressive, because usually we see, you know, debuts and some artists are scared to, you know, touch that album. I mean, we talk about Cardi B, it's 2018, yeah. It's been 5 years, she ain't touched the new album yet, you know what I'm saying? I mean, it's scary, you know, you think about that, how, especially when it's such a big album and it's so successful, that first album, and sometimes artists are scared to go back to that realm because either label, the artist, whoever is control or whatnot, they're kind of worried, wow, are we not going to meet that level of success again? I mean, we've seen countless artists. I mean, you just mentioned that how sophomore albums are sometimes you can see an inevitable kind of downturn for artists, and the fact that he maintained that energy on the second album, I think, even makes that first album even more impressive. I don't know, it's kind of interesting how the second album's kind of linked to the first album, but I think it's a positive that he dropped two dope albums in the same year. Like,
hey, I tell you what, if I was Cardi B, y'all wouldn't see me again. She got Pepsi commercials and shit now.
I mean, oh, yeah. Yeah.
We probably won't. Or when we do, I feel like whenever she does drop, if she does, it'll really be I felt like making music again. Here goes something I put together. Like, I don't think she is feeling any pressure or any urge for that matter to like drop it.
Honestly, I've always felt like rapping was kind of like her secondary career anyway. Cause like she was that was her secondary career anyway. And then I think they just kind of struck gold with Bodak Yellow. He's like, oh, we got to do this album thing now. You know what I'm saying? I think they just kind of struck gold with that. But I mean, if we don't see her again, that wouldn't be surprising.
I'm not gonna lie to y'all. I have this, it might be unpopular, but I just have this very unique idea that her next album might be a joint project with Offset.
Oh, wow.
Wouldn't I be surprised at that?
Yeah, because I was thinking about this the other day. I was listening to their recent track, was it Jealousy? Where they both just snapped on there. But I was thinking, I'm like, well, we've seen the Carters do their whole thing. I'm like, you know, Big Sean and Janae have flirted with a potential extension to their catalog. So I'm like,
2088, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if it's really just them two. Just like,
I think that would do more for Offset than it would for Cardi.
Interesting.
That's what I think. Yeah. I feel like Offset would benefit more from that than Cardi. I think Cardi's kind of good, but I mean, Offset's doing his thing too. But yeah,
for sure.
So, I don't know. That'd be interesting.
Yeah. That's interesting. That's interesting. Yeah. So the first album for me, because it was probably one of the first albums that I feel like I was kind of aware of how big it was, but I feel like it's controversial in the sense of I don't personally think this is his debut, or it shouldn't be considered his debut. So it's funny how a lot of Drake fans feel about Thank Me Later.
Oh,
but I think that because of how big So Far Gone ended up being, Thank Me Later being considered a debut is, it's not unfair. It just feels like So Far Gone was really his debut to me. But if I am looking at Thank Me Later as the debut, I think it is impressive in the sense that while it is maybe not one of his best works, if you're looking at his discography, maybe it's not in the top half for most people. Maybe, maybe not. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a respectable piece of work that actually aged relatively well. Like, is the sound very evident of its era? Yes and no. Like, when you hear it, it doesn't sound exactly like today, but I don't think you would hear it and feel so distanced, you know, from that time or distant from that sound. And I think even thinking about where he was at that time, I don't think it was a disappointment, even with the where he was at in his ascension already by that time, especially kind of starting off the decade with that. And we all know what that year and what that decade even ended up being. So, yeah, I think it's impressive. I definitely, and I think it was impactful for his career, to be completely honest. So I think it deserves to be in the conversation.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Especially for like this generation of like music listeners and whatnot. I mean, that is an interesting point, because So Far Gone definitely felt like the debut, even though I remember going back, like when I was in like middle school when that came out. But I remember like So Far Gone being like, because on iTunes, it was just like the little, it was like 4 or 5 tracks. It was literally just like a little EP. Mm-hmm. If you bought it, you could download the mixtape, but it was like a little EP and had Best I Ever Had, all the successful, all the like the big ones and what like that, and stuff like that. But that's interesting, because So Far Gone does feel like the introduction to Drake as like a debut, because a lot of those records are some of his biggest records anyway. But nah, Thank Me Later, I agree with you in terms of like the sound. In terms of like, I'm thinking about like songs on there that may have like sound dated. I'm thinking like Show Me a Good Time maybe sounds a little dated, even though I love that song, but that might sound a little dated. And maybe Find Your Love, that was like not one of Kanye's best beats, but other than that,
Over to that list as well.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, you think so?
And Over got played out though.
Oh yeah.
Over, from last I saw, because his show hasn't came to Miami yet. I'm going at the end of the month. But last I saw, Over was on the track list for his tour. Yeah, and I don't dislike the song, because, again, I was outside for when it was a thing. But that's not a song I personally would want to hear in 2023. And I wouldn't want to hear that during, like, I guess you could say a prime or declining Drake tour. Personally, I just think it's aged out, me personally.
Another one I would say is like Fancy. That's another one that I'd be like, oh yeah, that's like a 2010 type song. But other than that, there's a lot of ones that I really enjoy, like a lot of his like album cuts, like The Resistance. That doesn't feel like an old track. Up All Night, even though, you know, that doesn't necessarily feel old to me.
It's aged well.
Light Up is one of my favorites. That doesn't necessarily, you know, I mean, obviously Ho's on there too, but that doesn't sound old to me. So I don't know. I think
actually, with Light Up, that's actually one of the most ironic songs in his catalog. And it's not because of him. Go back and listen to Ho's verse. Everything that he pretty much predicted in that verse.
He was talking. Yeah.
Yeah, he was talking that shit. So that's actually, that might be arguably one of the, if not the best song on there, is up there.
That's always one of my favorites. I don't think he did any, I mean, there were some songs that just the production sounded dated, because like, you know, production has just overall gotten better. But I don't think like overall I was like, wow, Drake was going for this trendy stuff at that time. I think more so later down the line, we could see Drake looking back and being like, even though they're good, you can be like, wow, Drake was really going for like a trendy type sound, like when he did the little TikTok, you know, left foot. Like, you can look back like, oh, Drake was trying to go for that trendy sound. I don't think he was trying to necessarily do that
I actually disagree with that one. Really? I got a few points I'm going to disagree with even with the So Far Gone and Thank Me Later analogy. But for that point in particular, I wouldn't say he was chasing the sound or anything, but when you look at a song like Find Your Love, that was the second single, I believe, because Over would have been the first one.
Yeah.
Yeah, when you look at like Find Your Love, I mean, obviously the Kanye influence is that's there all up and down. Hell, they basically switched songs when they had the Coliseum performance a few years ago, where Kanye ended up performing Find Your Love. But that was pretty much Find Your Love, Show Me a Good Time, and That's Something I'm Missing on there. Those were very Kanye-esque of the era. People forget from, I'm going to say 03 up until like maybe 2012. Kanye was a very huge feature killer, and people slowly started adopting like his backpacker like style. So Drake kind of got a whiff of that for sure with Thank Me Later.
That's fair.
Now, going to the other point I want to disagree on with So Far Gone, I've always viewed that as a mixtape because of the era it basically came in at the tail end of. So when I look at mixtapes now versus the early middle 2000s, maybe late 2000s, the vibe was different. It was, hey, I'm going to hop on the hottest beats possible, and I'm going to kill shit. Like, a lot of people like to say with Wayne, there's this, I don't subscribe to this, but a lot of people like to say, hey, he took the best beats and made them his own and all of that.
And did it better.
I don't agree with all of that. Yeah, I don't agree with all that shit, but I at least get the mentality. Mm-hmm. So with Drake, you know, he takes June 27th, and then now we got November 18th. Like, I get it. It was fire. But at the same time, it's like, yeah, it's not really, it never gave an album feel to me because half the work was already done.
Mm-hmm. That's fair.
You know, so yeah, that's how I always looked at it. Now, I do like it more than Thank Me Later, but it never had that it had an introduction, but not a debut feel to me.
It didn't feel big. It didn't feel big.
Yeah,
I can see to that point. I can see to that point.
Yeah, I think I was a junior in high school when that dropped, and it was fire. You know, we was kicking it, but it was just like we saw the potential. Like, I don't think anybody who was like a little older when Drake dropped could say, man, no, I ain't see him being like, no. When we saw, okay, we got a legit hybrid of an artist that's, you know, rising. He got Birdman, Wayne, and Jay Prince behind him. Like, I don't think anybody was surprised that he turned out to be what he turned out to be. So, yeah. I just always seen it as a mixtape, and then it just made sense that he had the commercial backing by the time Thank Me Later dropped.
Yeah.
That's fair. That's fair.
That's fair. Noah, what would your next album be?
Man, okay. Honestly, I kind of had both on because I wasn't sure. Well, I'm just going to say this one because I consider this his debut. I'm going to say Section 80, Kendrick Lamar, because that's like his actual debut. I mean, I guess that's why I was kind of like, I was like, Section 80 is an album. It's not a mixtape. It is an album. But people would say, oh, you know, Good Kid, Mad City is his major label debut. I'm going to say Section 80 is his debut studio
album. I agree.
I'm going to say Section 80. I'm going to say Section 80 because that was actually like my introduction to Kendrick Lamar. And I still think pretty underrated. It's still one of his better projects. Man, I think this was kind of like the step before the step that Good Kid, Mad City gave him, because it was like, man, this dude really has the potential to really be something, I think, kind of special. It's kind of reminded me of like all the TD artists too. Like, I'm thinking about like, you know, all the artists have like a studio album, and then like the next album they get even bigger. Like, I'm thinking about Schoolboy Q. He had Habits and Contradictions, which was good, and then he like blew up with like Oxymoron. SZA had that album, I think that was, she had like a little project, I think
was. Before
that, and then she dropped Control, and then she blew up. I'm thinking about, I mean, obviously to like a smaller scale, but like Isaiah Rashad had like Sylvia Demo, and then he had Sun's Tyre, and he got a little bigger and obviously blew up. But I think of, you know, Kendrick Lamar obviously like was like the birth of all that. And man, I mean, I just think that this album's pretty freaking great.
It's a time. Now, I do think that this is more of a timepiece album, but I also think that just speaks more to Kendrick's evolution as an artist. I think that it's relatively impressive that if this was a bag you felt comfortable in as your debut, I'm not necessarily surprised by the albums that followed in the bags that you kind of got comfortable in, because you showed on a debut that you were willing to go outside of the commercial sound and be comfortable and still show yourself as a lyricist. So yeah, I'd agree. I definitely agree with it being a debut album and definitely one of the most impressive ones. I mean, whether you're talking about West Coast hip hop or just hip hop in general, I don't think he necessarily put the industry on notice just yet when it happened. Nah. I think that was definitely Good Kid.
Yeah.
And I think that would maybe be the argument against how impactful or memorable it may be. But if you are a Kendrick fan.
And you just looking back, you're like, damn, that was a, I mean, I know for me, dog, like all the little backpackers, I mean, ADHD was the ish. I mean, all the people that like,
still one of my grew favorite up,
like
songs
actually buying day. Music. Everybody jokes about, oh man, I remember that being the first song that always pops up when you put it, you plug it into your phone and whatnot. But I mean, into your car or whatnot. But man, and I guess it wasn't big because there wasn't really like a hit on here. I mean, ADHD was a, you know, a popular song for this album. Rigor Mortis, I'm thinking about. There wasn't like a necessarily a big hit, but I think this is just a solid project, and it was just kind of like him going into like that storytelling mode. This has that same stuff with like the little interludes where he's like speaking around a fire and whatnot, if y'all remember that album. But yeah, man, I think this is just like a preview of what was to come. So yeah,
I'll take it a step further. A lot of people don't notice this, but Kendrick had the same type of, I guess you could say, trajectory, or he had the same type of journey Kanye had, in the sense that he took away from his own debut album, and hell, even the next album, because he kept getting better, and everybody started picking up on the influence. This is an honorable mention, but I was going to, you know, throw out College Dropout, but a lot of people forget about College Dropout and what it did, just because everything else after that got better. Kendrick had the same problem, because it was like, oh, damn, Section 80, oh, yeah, that's fire. But then Good Kid comes out, and it's like, it's flawless. It damn near almost made you forget just how special Section 80 was. Then he just keeps it going and keeps it going, and it's like, I don't think we've ever seen him, like, we haven't seen him fall off, and I don't think we will anytime soon. So I think he has that same problem Kanye had. It wasn't until, hell, I guess you could say, Yay, where we just hit a pause and be like, well, damn, Kanye had a good run. So now this is my favorite. This is my,
yeah. The rise was too fast. Cause I mean, think about it. There's 2 hours between him, that and Pimp Butterfly. People, I was like, oh my gosh, Kendrick's already to go. Like, it's already just like, the expectation was already kind of crazy. And with Good Kid, M.A.A.D City, and people was waiting after that album, people were like, oh my gosh, we need Kendrick to drop an immediate classic. And then Pimp Butterfly essentially like came like the poster child for like, oh, this is a perfect rap album and whatnot. I mean, great album, not mocking it or anything, but you know, I agree with you on that in terms of just like his meteoric rise, in terms of how fast it was, in terms of each album he got better and better, and the expectations kept growing and growing and growing. And it's kind of crazy where we're at now, because it feels like, you know, obviously he's been around for a minute, but like, you just think about it, like, he doesn't have that many albums. I mean, like, you thinking about, like,
and I love that so much.
You got Section 80, Good Kid, M.A.A.D City, Thriller Butterfly, Damn, and Mr. Brown, the Big Step. Like, that's it. That's not a lot of albums. You know what I'm saying? I mean, obviously, he has mixtapes, but that's not like a lot of albums when you think about it. Which is,
You gotta let the art run, man. You gotta let it live. Now, I love that about him personally.
First of all, I'm the number one supporter of like waiting between albums, like. I'm gonna listen to this Drake album, but I'm a big like advocate of like letting people miss an artist. That's like a big thing for me. So
yeah. Well, you say that, that's a good segue. Kind of the album that came to mind for me that was next, and this is not ranked, by the way, because I couldn't dare rank some of this. But again, the album I was outside for growing up with, what's regarded as one of the best debut albums of all time, if not albums of all time, you got Get Rich or Die Trying. Like, you're talking about a meteoric rise. My God.
Literally, probably not one bigger, honestly. Probably not one bigger than this one.
Yeah.
I'd say the biggest.
You know, being outside for it was one thing. Like, I'm talking, when I say outside, like, we had legit block parties. For albums like Get Rich or Die Trying and a few others that came in early 2000s. But this was one of those where, I'm talking about nationally, every city probably had at least two hip-hop radio stations. You would hear In the Club on both of them at the same time. Like, it was that type of a deal. Because coming off of Ja Rule's run, The Lox was doing their thing, Fat Joe doing their thing. He comes out, he lets everybody know, me and this Ja Dude, we not cool. I'm coming out shooting at him with Wangster from the jump.
I don't like him.
I don't like him.
There's not no hip-hop stuff. I really don't like him.
Yeah. The fact you said the only time that beef is going to end is if one of them dies, and it's still not even going to be over. Like, he comes out the gate, because he had tracks before then. Some of them are actually fire. But he come out the gate aligned with Eminem and Dre, and he's just dropping hit after hit, album cut after album cut. Like, it's crazy. If you go back and listen to that album now, all of the album cuts have aged way better than the singles, and the singles are still fire. Mm-hmm. Like, that's like, we didn't appreciate it the way we should have. And I'm glad to see he's on his final lap tour, you know, still pushing that same.
And you see how big he is now. You see how big people still are. You see how huge he is. He's selling out arenas still.
Yeah, like, and arenas, and then he's selling out stadiums overseas, like, you know.
My second album, do y'all want me to stay in hip-hop or do y'all want me to pivot to R&B?
Well, I didn't know we were doing
thing. Do your thing. I'm for either or. I didn't know we were doing R&B, but
I didn't know that either, but that's cool.
I'm sorry, does that throw y'all for a loop? Can y'all think of R&B or do y'all want to stay hip-hop? I don't want to throw y'all off.
I throw it out there. I think it's good. I think it's a good conversation. Throw it out there.
I would think that this counts as his debut. Channel Orange.
Ooh. Man, yes.
That's his debut album.
That's his debut album, yes. Yes.
Now, I don't know how tricky it gets with knowing of Frank through Odd Future, and I know he had a mixtape, possibly two, before this dropped, but I think the moment that Channel Orange was like that, like, Channel Orange is high school for me, sophomore year. Like, I'm into music. I'm into, like, following artists now. I mean, Thinking About You was massive as a single. And so that album, as an R&B album, and, like, as in that time for me developing, like, an appreciation for R&B, especially in that era and at that time, Channel Orange was a moment to me. I think that Channel Orange was a moment in R&B, and because Frank, he's not the first. I don't know how I want to say this, but Frank is one of those artists that really blurs the line of genre. Like, clearly he's R&B, but there's alternative. Frank can rap. I'm not, you know, putting him on no list of rappers or
nothing. He raps.
But yeah. Frank raps.
He does it.
You know what I'm saying? He does it respectably enough to where
it's cool.
I'd listen to it. You know, it's cool. You know, so I just think for as a debut album and for albums that we now, granted, Frank is in a space where that man should drop soon too, and we don't know if we're gonna get that. But maybe more so to the point, if we're not getting another Frank album, Channel Orange is still something that I can go play as an album and be satisfied with in 2023. I don't know how much stock somebody may want to give to that, but I think that's a noteworthy thing of why I feel like it's an impactful or impressive debut album.
Nah, I think that's a good pick. It's cool that you kind of pivot to R&B anyway. But, like, I mean, because a lot of those lines are kind of, I mean, not to, like, R&B's fault, but a lot of those lines have been blurred anyway when people are thinking about R&B hip-hop anyway. Like, people kind of mesh them together anyway, but that's another point. Nah, I think that's a good point because when I was in middle school and, like, high school, a lot of people I knew around were, like, big Odd Future fans and whatnot and, like, into all that. Future, you know, all that stuff. I was into it kind of, but not all the way deep. And there's a lot of people who had the shirts, the socks, the Vans, the whole thing, the hats and all that stuff. But I think that's a good pull because I think, you know, obviously he was kind of playing the background in Odd Future because Tyler, Earl, all those guys was in it and everything. And it was cool. Mm-hmm. But when he dropped, it was like, he's in Odd Future still. That's what kind of people were thinking of. It's like, oh, he's in Odd Future still because it's obvious like he kind of left because he kind of grew out of it just because like, the music that he was making. Yeah. And I think this is a really good pull just because like, and obviously it's important because this is one of his only albums. I mean, like
one of two,
I mean, it's one of two albums. So like that's significant in itself. The fact that it's just the only album that he's basically dropped. So like, yeah. And it was good. So that's a good pull for me just because like, it's good and he only doesn't drop music. So
Hey man, enjoy. Frank is a mercurial ass dude. If I ain't never seen one, man, it's really hard to like put into words what his career like really means to us. Not in a bad way. Well, right. Shit, not in a good way either. But it's just more like, because you know, when I said I was Mr. Unpopular Opinion, I meant that. Channel Orange is the last good album we got from him, in my opinion.
Whoa! Oh my god!
Yeah,
I
do not fuck with Blonde.
And there we have it. And there we have it.
Yeah.
Oh man. That's crazy. That's crazy.
Yeah, I will legit pull out my yoga mat and start stretching in order to go play frisbee with Blonde. That's how I really hate it. Like I'm like standing 10 toes down on that one. But that's not crazy. The point here. The point is with Channel Orange.
I'm not even the biggest like Frank fan, dog. Like I'm not even the biggest like Frank fan. Seriously, but like, wow. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hey, listen, man. Somebody got to do it.
Frisbee with it is crazy.
Listen, man. I'd be hating sometimes. It'd be like that, but It's just like with Channel Orange, it was so beautiful. But I think what actually amplified it was coming off of Nostalgia Ultra. Mm-hmm. I think that we like Channel Orange, but I don't know that we love it the way we do without having that as a precursor. You know what I'm saying? Because Nostalgia gave us a sound and a feel to kind of get warmed up to. And, you know, that's what helped launch Channel Orange to what it was. On top of that, you couldn't help but rally around him because that was the time he came out. Yep. And also, too, the music was just that good. But it's because we had already grown some type of attachment to him and, you know, his Odd Future connection. And we didn't know he was as, I don't want to use the word weird. He is weird, but we didn't know he was as mercurial as
or thoughtful. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, that's a good point.
So
yeah.
I just think it's a number of factors that made Channel Orange so special. But yeah, little did we know back then he would pretty much hate his fans because of all the shit he's been doing recently between the performances.
Yeah. The one performance.
Right. The random unannounced vinyls that people really wanted to buy but didn't know came out until they were sold out. Like, all of that type of stuff. You know, no one knew that he would become this, like, unexplainable entity that gets on their nerves all the way up his music. So,
nah, I agree with that. And I like the point that, Steve, you made earlier about, like, him blurring the lines. Because you think about, like, a few features he has in this album. He got Earl, he got John Mayer, and he got Andre 3000. I mean, I know people that love Frank. I got a particular friend who's a huge Frank fan, and I'm a big Earl Sweatshirt fan, and he's like, man, I can't get into Earl. But he's like, man, I love that. I love his verse on Super Rich Kids. I mean, like, that's just kind of the effect that Frank can have on people. Like, so that's a good pull.
Yeah. So, yeah. I think that was the Nostalgia Ultra point was a great point, though, and it actually wasn't something that I considered. But he did have a... He set the stage for Channel Orange for sure, and Nostalgia Ultra definitely helped. So I definitely feel that. Yeah. No. Next album.
Man, this is tough because I have a lot on my list. This is really tough. I want to name one that's like a personal. Okay, at the end, because I know we're gonna go through a lot. I'm gonna name like all the ones but I'm gonna do the one that's like, I feel like was actually impactful and kind of had like a kind of a moment. I'm gonna say ASAP Rocky, Long Live ASAP. I'm gonna say that.
Shit, no, all right.
I'm gonna ASAP. Honestly, I'm gonna say this. ASAP this record kind of been crazy lately because like people be like, man, ASAP music fall off, and people be like, man, what was Testing? Testing was like one of his best albums, honestly. But like,
absolutely.
I love that album, but you know, people are like, oh, Testing kind of trash. Like, I love that album, but
Testing got hated on because it got overshadowed between the Drake and Pusha shit. Remember, it came out the same night as Daytona, yeah. So everybody, nobody listening to it.
But people said it was bad too. I'm not gonna say people didn't. People said it was bad. People said it was bad. I just think that's flatly not true. I think no. People say Testing and people you put oh, I think Testing was good. That's gonna be a hot topic on Twitter if you're like somebody that goes viral on Twitter and stuff like that. Like that's or X now. Long Live ASAP, all those first couple album titles hard to decipher. But Nah, man, I think that's a great debut, and especially with ASAP, you can't say his sound was different because not like he was doing something sonically different, but the fact that he was a New York guy that was taking all these Houston, Texas, Southern type sounds and doing his own thing with it, I thought was super dope. I mean, and it's just kind of going off the theme. We already had kind of introduction to ASAP with the Long Live ASAP. I mean, that's a great mixtape too. I mean, not Long Live ASAP. Live Love ASAP is a mixtape. I'm getting confused. I'm usually good with this stuff, bro, but like,
he did that shit intentionally.
Bro. Yeah, I know. Obviously, yeah. But the mixtape was like a pretty good introduction because, I mean, that was, he was already doing like the Chop and Screw stuff and everything with like songs like, I'm trying to think of song. Obviously, Purple Swag, Keep It G. There's a lot of songs where he has like that Houston type sound. And I thought Long Live ASAP was just like a good introduction of him just like being the fly guy, honestly. And him, he didn't really deep dive into like trying new things and being really experimental with it. But I think it was like a good like intro into him like trying stuff. Cause I think on At Long Last ASAP, the second album, he kind of delved deeper into like trying unique things and whatnot. But I think on this one, he was kind of messing around with the on songs like even Fast Killer, which wasn't my ish back in the day, but I think it's cool now. I think it's just a really good precursor because I really enjoyed that album, and then he just got better and better and better as the time went on. I mean, there's a lot of good songs here. Obviously, Goldie was like one of the popular songs.
There's a lot of good songs.
Goldie's on there.
Goldie's my shit.
But PMW, that was my ish when I was in high school. Effort Problems, obviously. Wild for the Night was like the
Skrillex. One Train.
Obviously, that's like a iconic posse cook. It's like everybody he had on there, and honestly, like the people he kind of not he didn't put on, but like a lot of people like. Like I'm a big Joey Badass fan, and he put a lot of people on the Joey Badass with that record too. And Big Crit just came and killed it in. I think he has the best verse on that. But I just love this project a lot, and I think it really started up a really good career with ASAP because I think his next two albums are excellent and even better than this one. But I love this album.
That's a good one.
Okay, I'm gonna stay in the Dr. Dre family. We mentioned the massacre, but I have to throw out the documentary.
Oh, that was on my list. That was on my list.
Yeah, because the massacre suffered this, which sounds crazy. It suffered to make the documentary better, and the massacre was still fire. But the documentary is one of the most underrated and underappreciated debut albums of all time. Like again, been outside for it. Like the way the game, not the best person in the world, you know, how you feel about him on a personal level. Hey, I would never argue anybody that. But as a rapper, as an artist,
he's so consistent.
The guy is consistent. He doesn't have a bad album. And he showed us what type of problem he was about to be in music when he dropped the documentary. Like the production on is good. The bars are good. The storytelling is good. Like there's no real complaints outside of him and personal reasons that people could have about this album. Like it sold millions because, again, he had a big machine behind him before he went and burnt those bridges. But even beyond that, it set the tone for a remarkable career he's had. Even with his disassociation with 50, M, and Dre, and Jimmy Iovine, he's still become one of the most remarkable and honestly talented rappers in the game. Like, I would have him... If I did a top 50 list, he would be higher than a lot of people that we currently listen to and of all time. So
go back to hip hop. We're going to go back to the 90s. So obviously I was not around for this, but I've read interviews about it. I've watched multiple documentaries. I've watched the show. I've done the research. Enter the Wu-Tang.
Oh my gosh.
It's so disruptive, but so necessary for hip hop that it's just hard not to mention. Because, first of all, what is this? What is nine dudes rapping over this crazy basement-esque, like, you know, sound and feel? Like, what are we listening to and why are we enjoying it so much? Like, even as I listen to it now, like, you try listening to that now, and unless you kind of understand why it's so big when you first hear it, you're kind of like listening to those albums in present day, like it's an adjustment because nothing sounds like that. But because
not at all.
Because of that, because of the individual talent that was in the group that made the group so great. When the majority of your album are all posse cuts and they're all fire, essentially, I haven't seen that done in any other capacity before. So yeah, they gotta be in the running of some capacity to be on this
list. No doubt. I've been pulling back on using like the 90s stuff because I have been trying to keep it to like albums I was there for. But like in terms of just like talking about that album in particular, from like interviews and things that I saw, especially like people that like that were like there when the album came out, they were like, man, it was so interesting because it was hard to decipher who were some of the better, like who was who, because again, different time, you couldn't look up, you know, when you're looking at a group right now, you're like, oh, who's this artist, what's the verse on this, who did it, oh, that's who, you put a face to it. That was a different time than in terms of putting an album. And I'm looking at like these tracks, dog, like every song is just like a banger, dog. Like Bring the Ruckus is ridiculous. Clan the Front, Can It All Be So Simple, it's crazy. The Mystery of Cheese Boxing, obviously like Cream and Method Man are like big tracks, but like yeah, I mean, and 1993 was like you talk about like iconic hip hop years. 1993 is like up there in terms of like just look at the albums that came out that you can be like, damn. But
yeah,
man. It's just like we talking about like you know, I think, you know, people have did like the NWA and what sparked the careers of those, and like look at the offshoots, Eminem, all those. Like you could say the same thing with Wu-Tang, because in the fact that all of them, I mean, not all of them, but like a lot of like half the group members went on to have pretty great solo careers. I mean, you talk about Ghostface had a great albums. He's probably the best one for me. Raekwon, Method Man, obviously GZA had a great debut album, and RZA just kind of did his thing. So I this has to be up there. So, and people don't like to say like this. It's like people talk about the best groups. People like to be like, oh, Wu-Tang's like a crew. I'd be like, they came out as a group. People try to like slide it. It's like, are they really?
No,
a group?
They're definitely. They're
people try to group. Do people. People try to do that. People like, oh, they was like, they're like a T. I was like, no, they came out as a group and then they did the solo thing. So, great pick.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about one of the most influential, not only groups but albums of all time. To the point, you got whites and Asians wearing Wu-Tang gear. It, like you, to your point, it launched some of the best solo careers that we've ever seen. Hell, half of them guys are in, you got RZA and Meth, they in acting, which is pretty huge.
RZA got like 30 movies, dog.
Yeah, like bro, like it all started from that. And then two, a lot of people don't look at it like this, but it basically gave the East Coast a variation of what NWA was on the West Coast.
Exactly.
Like, they were rebellious too, to a certain degree. Mm-hmm. And you know, it made it cool to just do something out the traditional format of what rap was at that time. So yeah, this shit right here, I still listen to a few of the tracks, but it's just like when I hear the sound, this is one of them albums that like it feels like a video game to me. Like it takes you to a whole different place where you kind of want to be in. Yeah, like you legit want. Damn, I love to be a Wu-Tang. You know what I'm saying? Like it was one of those for me.
I think one of the things that I think that's like people don't think about now is like, this album didn't come out. Like, obviously, we think about debut albums now. They come out firing. They go crazy instantly. I mean, this album was not an instant hit. If you look at, like, the charts and whatnot, it was like, wow, this album debut. It was the biggest track. Oh, it was going crazy. It was kind of a slow burn. And then Cream kind of gained some momentum. And then they popped off. But it was kind of a slow burn in terms of, like, people catching on to who Wu-Tang was. But, man, this album is incredible, dog. So, I mean,
hey, watching their documentary,
yeah,
it only makes you wonder, dog, what if they had social media?
Right? Oh my god. Oh my god.
Like, shit would have been banana. Because, bro, look at all the archival footage they had. Like the video of
them. They was recording everything. They was recording everything.
Yeah. Like what? Like fucking insane.
Yeah, I agree. And the fact that like, I mean, it's just like a black album because you just think about like black people like liking kung fu stuff, like I mean, I don't know about y'all, but like, I grew up loving all the Bruce Lee movies and stuff like that. Like, my pops, all them VHSs and stuff like that. Like, all the kung fu stuff, just combining those two worlds. And black people love kung fu movies. At least the black people I grew up around love kung fu movies. So, like, I don't know. I just thought it was dope that they did that. And it's, yeah, it's cool.
Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah, we'll go one more round of albums. So last one. So whichever one, we'll go through the list of those we didn't get a chance to go through in depth. But if you had one more to like that you want to make sure you say should be in the conversation, what's it gonna be?
Okay. I'm gonna stick with the theme of artists that I was like around for, like, and this one might not be like in terms of like big in terms of just like moments of anything like that. This might be like the little backpacker in me, but I mean, he's kind of bigger now, but Joey Badass Before the Money. I was a huge Joey Badass fan growing up. He was like 1999 came out like right when I started high school. And that was like the artist that really kind of got me to like underground backpacker stuff. And if people like know me, that's like my thing. And Joey Badass is kind of like the introduction for that for me. So he had 1999, he had Summer Nights. Those were two mixtapes. And 1999 was like the last, like one of the last like great actual mixtapes that came out like during like the blogger and whatnot. But Before the Money, which was like his debut album, 2015, I think. I don't think people understand like how successful he was at that, because he was actually like, you know, people kind of joke that Chance the Rapper was like fake independent or whatever and whatnot. People kind of joked around with that.
Yeah.
Joey Badass was actually independent, and he sold 50,000 records that first week. And I don't think people understand how like impressive that is.
That's a huge feat.
That's like ridiculous. Crazy. Like he was actually independent, like really independent, and he sold 50,000 records, his first album, his debut album. I mean, that's just crazy. And I remember being so hyped when he did like the little trailer for Before the Money. Man, I don't think, oh man, I love Joey Badass, and I think his last two albums have been good. I don't think they're quite as good as like his first couple albums, especially this one. But man, Before the Money was such a big album in my life, because I was just like a big Joey Badass fan. I love that album, dog. And yeah, it's a great album. Great album.
Yeah.
Nothing too big on like impact, but just a good album I liked.
Okay. So with mine, I wouldn't put this in like on my favorites per se, but I didn't want to come on this podcast and not take it to this point. So right now we see women running the game. You know, we see the Lottos, we see Sexy Red, Cardi's, we see Meg, et cetera, et cetera. None of this is happening without Lil' Kim's Hardcore.
I was wondering if you were going to bring this up.
Yeah, I have good. To give women their credit. You know, I know they haven't always had like the most noticeable presence due to, you know, marketing and machine stuff, all of that. But, you know, women have always had some type of foot in hip hop, and we also got to give them their flowers. And it starts with Lil' Kim. She's not the only one. It's obviously women before her.
MC Light, all them. Yeah.
Right. You know, but the fact that we're seeing essentially like the children and grandchildren of Kim in present day, her style, her flair. Hell, every Halloween, we see in Lil' Kim costumes. Every tribute, you know, we got girls running to wear some form of a Lil' Kim variation. You know, outfit. Like,
yeah.
That stuff matters. You know, we're seeing the kids that legit saw her between 96 and 2000, whatever. We're seeing them as adults now, and we're hearing it in their music. That's so, I gotta give the flowers to the Notorious K.I.M. You know, a lot of people say, "Oh, she didn't write everything." That's cool, but she had the ability. Like, she.
I don't think that applies. We're not talking about like the most. People.
But even so, it's just like, you know, like I don't think people like. I'm glad she's getting her flowers now, but it's just like a lot of people have always tried to shortchange her. And it's never worked because she is who she is. Even back then, like, they had her on the news and stuff all the time. They had her on talk shows and stuff all the time that she was too mood, too promiscuous, all of that. Look where that influence, you know, got us to. Like, some of the best music is some of the mood and most raunchy music. Some of that stuff is going, we got it going up in clubs right now. It's all because of Kim. Like, she's a huge part of that. So I definitely want to give her flowers on that. And I definitely think Hardcore was a huge debut, and it was way, way before its time. And we need to show appreciation for that.
Yeah. I think it's just like thinking about just like, it's kind of, I mean, it's cool that she was big at the time and she had big records, but I think it's just cool now that like, she was like the first step. And like, I mean, you're talking about like all these raunchy, you know, women that are rapping and stuff like, but like, there's so many. I mean, I think it's just cool that like now we're at the point where like there's so many different styles of women who are rapping now that like we could have that stuff and like somebody like I don't know, Little Sims, just like do her thing now. So I think it's just, I don't know, I think it's dope that we're just at the point we are now where like women of all different styles are just rapping their ass off and just doing their thing. So she was like the first step in that. So that's a good pull for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, no, agreed. Okay, my last one. I wanted to go with somebody else who I was around for, who I experienced in real time, because there's so many that we'll name as just honorable mentions for the conversation. I'm going to go with a relatively recent drop, considering the albums we've named. My Turn, Lil Baby.
Good one.
Because I think, and honestly, his documentary was more impressive than I thought it was going to be. Other aesthetic purposes, I don't really like how it was shot. I feel like it was kind of shot, kind of lazy. But nonetheless, the information we got, I didn't really put into perspective. Like, we all knew, like, how big Lil Baby was. We knew, like, going into 2020, it was like Lil Baby and Gunna, basically. They were, like, the two that were, like, who's going to essentially be the best new rapper.
Yeah, top dog.
That was the conversation. And Lil Baby was all, I think Lil Baby already kind of had the edge. I always feel like with those two, it came down to just really your sound, what you prefer to hear sonically. But I feel like Lil Baby kind of like, he had a little bit more of a fan base. He was a little bit bigger. And I didn't put into perspective that My Turn dropped essentially right as COVID started.
Yep.
And so what we did not get to see was the full impact of My Turn from the standpoint of we see Lil Baby struggling now. I think that tour for My Turn would have been nuts more than like
that was supposed to be his.
And I think that was supposed to be. Now, I don't think that was his introduction. By no means was it his introduction, but I think it was his ascension into mainstream. Like, that was his I'm here moment. Like, I'm top dog. This is me saying I'm top dog. I feel like that was his moment. And as a debut in the last 5 years or so in recent memory, that was a boom. Like, the industry was kind of, to a degree, put on notice. We were like, okay, he can put together a project with multiple songs, multiple hits, and nobody from any aspect of the culture or the hip hop community really has too much to complain about.
Nice.
I don't want to poo-poo anything. Is that the debut or is it Harder Than Ever? I don't know.
So I always thought Harder Than Ever was a mixtape. Granted, we are in the times where who knows?
That's the thing. I always thought Harder Than Ever was a mixtape. And then I'm like Googling stuff and people are like, oh, that's a debut. But I always felt like that was a mixtape. Like, it always felt like a mixtape. Right. So I guess technically it might be the debut, but it always felt like a mixtape when it came out to me.
Yeah, that I feel like My Turn was marketed as the debut
studio. Yeah. Big. Yeah. That's how I felt. But I don't know the technicality.
He was seen as up next.
Yeah. Yeah. But that'd be my last entry. It's like an album that actually dropped, and I was like, nah, people are like nah, the homies they can't wait to talk about this new Baby album. Like, this is people care about this. Like, this is taking over Twitter for the weekend, you know, type of deal. But yeah, this has been a great episode, man. I definitely want to thank both of y'all for taking the time and coming on, man. Y'all will definitely be on again. There were too many other subtopics that we didn't dive into that we're gonna have to bring y'all back on, like, to get into. But yeah, man. That's pretty much it. Definitely let us know what y'all think about the debut albums. Did we miss any? We might have missed a couple, potentially.
We probably did. We probably did. People were like, oh my gosh.
Of course we did. Of course we did. But yeah, let us know. Right. Let us know what we missed. And yeah, until next time, I'll catch y'all next episode. Peace.